Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
My name's Paul Bestall, and you're listening to Mysteries and Monsters. The world is a possibility if you'll only try. This week, my guest is the Greek ufologist and author Stefanos Panagiotakis. Stefanos has recently released his first English-language book, The Road to Pascagoula, which is printed by Philip Mantle's Flying Disc Press. The Pascagoula case has recently returned to prominence over the last 12 months, with Calvin Parker coming forward to finally give his side of the story after 40 years of silence. We discuss how Stefanos found himself in Pascagoula, how the case has affected him in the years since, and ufology in Greece, with a minor detour through train timetables in Pontefract. Don't forget the podcast is now available on iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, and other podcast aggregators. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, support us on Patreon, and support and share us. Now it's time for the interview. Today, I'm joined by Greek ufologist Stefanos Panagiotakis. We're discussing his recent book, The Road to Pascagoula, which has recently been released in the UK by Flying Disc Press. Stefanos, thank you for joining me today. Welcome.
Hello, Paul. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Thank you. So let's just go back to the beginning when this first appeared in Greece, I believe. It was printed in a publication, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes, in Britain, and not as a book, in the form of a book. It was released in a publication in a part of series about eight different issues of the said magazine.
So had that been something that you'd obviously, because I think your early career were you the international correspondent?
Yeah, exactly. So, I'm not I never was a regular or a experienced ufologist, as we say, or researcher, just because I like to read books about this phenomena since I was a young boy, and because I was outside Greece, and for a Greek magazine, it is very hard to have a correspondence all around the world. So I became in this magazine the reporter. Whenever it happened to me or whatever, I'm visiting different places in Peru or in Egypt, everywhere, you know. And I sent them my reports. And finally, I was very lucky to be in my place of interest, which was Pascagoula.
Yeah, very much so. So we'll get to how you ended up there, but... What was it about the Pascagoula case at the time that interested you, Stephanos? What was different about Charles Hickson and Calvin Parker's experience that appealed to you above other cases?
I heard about this incident through our national television, 9 o'clock news. And the next day of the incident, I remember was October 12 of October 1973. I was newly married, as I recall, and I was ready to sail after a few days with my first ship. And the next day I heard this, I went to I bought a newspaper they write about, but they were not so sure, you know. They said that this fisherman probably saw something or have an experience. But this, how can I say, stuck in my mind. I have read a lot of books, and I knew many, many stories. The only story which was excited me was the incident in New Hampshire of Betty and Barney Hill.
Yes.
And this was the second one that amazes me, fascinates me.
Yeah.
And this was remaining in my mind all those years after. And suddenly, on 1981, I was very, very lucky to be there. When I heard about this, I decided to do the minimum I could do, you know.
Yeah, of course.
But I was very lucky because the ship is scheduled to stay only 48 hours and finally remain 1 week. Mm. And I was very lucky, Paul. And I met interesting people there who helped me a lot. And finally, I met Charles Hickson. I discovered an unknown witness. And exactly this witness was the thing that surprises Philip Mendel.
Mm.
And then the story began a few months ago.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did you get hold of Philip? What was the catalyst for you to say, right, I'd like to get this book printed?
Many stories, similar stories of different interest happening those days. It's because of the social media, Facebook.
Yes.
Okay, I have my page there, you know, my profile. And I had a friend from United States. His name is Bob Mulder. And suddenly, I wrote in my personal my profile a lot of times about my experience in Pascagoula, just for my friends to read about. And he knew that. And suddenly, without having an idea, Philip Mendel met Calvin Parker.
Yes.
And Calvin Parker wrote his book, and Philip Mendel published it. And one day, this friend, Mr. Mulder, write to me, Stephanos, I have to tell you that Calvin Parker returned back to the States under the spotlight. He made the book, and I was amazing about this. I can't believe it.
Mm.
And then I went to the page of Calvin Parker, and when I saw that the advertisement about his book, and I wrote, as everybody's wrote, congratulations and all this stuff. I said, hey Parker, hey Calvin, hello. My name is Stephanos Panagiotakis. I was in Pascagoula in 1981. I met your friend Charles Hickson, and I wrote my experience in a little book in Greek. That's all. And Philip Mendel saw it after a few hours, and he sent me an email, and everything started from there. You know.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I mean, it is one of those stories, like you say. I think, you know, as you've just referred to about Betty and Barney Hill.
Yes.
The thing about Charles and Calvin's incident is that at that time, really, the Hill case was probably the only one that had a bit more authenticity to it. It seemed more real than some of, you know, the previous stories that we'd heard about people coming from Venus and, you know, George Adamski and those kinds of stories, where the Hills were just two people driving home one night and something extremely strange happened to them. And obviously the same similar situation happened to Charles and Calvin, you know, 5 or 6 years later. And obviously we had a couple of stories after that. Travis Walton is probably the next big one that comes
up. Of course, of course. Yeah, yeah.
So really, there wasn't much in the way of similar stories at that time, was there?
No. There were similar stories. Because in Betty and Barney Hill, we have an absence of time. They have 2 hours... which they don't remember nothing.
Yeah.
You know, but here with Charles and with Charlie Hickson and Calvin Parker, they live the incident. They know everything.
Mm.
But the most important is finally proved that Calvin Parker had an experience, something more. More experienced than Charlie.
Yes.
As you read the book, that his finally sense that was, except besides these creatures, which were probably robots, a female alien spoke to Calvin.
Yes.
But Charles Hickson didn't mention anything like this. The only thing I knew, he told us, Charles Hickson told us, was that those creatures tried to communicate with and communicate with him in the years after.
Yeah.
A couple of times, you know. In one of them, he decided to go with them. They told him, like, Charlie, you come to us, but his family, which was there, everybody saw this craft and the willing of Charles Hickson to get out of the car and go to the craft.
Yeah.
So that proves that these creatures finally contact with mentally with Charles Hickson, but he never has this experience during his abduction in the craft in Pascagoula.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, that's the other additional thing here. I think people sometimes, you know, when they look at the Pascagoula case, they'd think, right, it's just these two guys who have gone fishing after a hard day at work, early evening, and that's all there is to it. But there was a lot more that went on, both around the incident at the time, and obviously, as you refer to, Charles had several incidents after the event that continued his sort of experience, wasn't it?
Yes, of course.
Absolutely. So, let's go back there. So we're back in 1981. How on earth did a young man from Greece find himself in Mississippi?
It was a matter of coincidence.
Yeah.
I was programmed, scheduled to join a ship in Singapore.
Mm.
But I was ready. I was ready to go to Singapore about 20 days prior. They sent me to the other ship, and suddenly one morning they called me and they said, "Stefanos, please come to the offices of the shipping company. There is a problem." Mm. For a moment, I thought that they canceled my, you know.
Yeah, I thought you were in trouble.
my mutual agreement. But yeah. When I went there, I met the port captain, says, "Stefanos, our radio officer in the other ship, Torm Jesse, which is now in Barcelona. Not exactly in Barcelona, it was in Valencia.
Yes.
But you have to go to Barcelona immediately because the man is very sick and the ship is ready to sail. So everything is changing. In 24 hours, I was in a plane flying to Barcelona. Arrived in Barcelona and then I went by car to Valencia. Mm. I remember I arrived late at night there. And the very next morning, the ship sailed. I never met this radio officer because he was very sick. Yes, he was in a hospital in Valencia. So I went to the new ship. I have to discover again how all this equipment works. Mm. And the next morning we sailed and from Valencia. When we arrived in Gibraltar Straits, it came the telegram with instructions where the ship has to go and load.
Yeah.
So we have to go in the other side of Atlantic, west side, to the America and to the United States. And there were a lot of ports because the ship was a general cargo ship. Mm. That means it has to go in many ports for a little while and get different products from any port, from every port. One of those ports was Pascagoula. That's I was crazy. I cannot believe it. I read it again and again. Then I went to the captain. I said, "Captain, our orders arrived. Here are the ports." He get the telegram, read it, and says, "Ah, oh, yes, Houston, as New Orleans, Charleston, New York." Hmm. What is this, Pascagoula? I remember he was in the smoke room with the other officers and they were watching a film and say to the others, "Hey, guys, does anyone of you know or ever been in a place like named Pascagoula?" And everybody's looked. "Say, Captain, what is this?" "I don't know." So he took the telegram, the second officer, the chief officer, and they went up to the bridge. They opened the port guide. It's a very... very fat volume, a big book.
Yeah.
Where are all the ports of the world inside there? They went to the letter P, 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 A, P, A, P, A, P, Pas, Pascagoula. And they say, "Ah, oh, it's very near to New Orleans." And I was laughing all the time. And the captain says to me, "Why you are laughing, Stefanos?" I say, "Captain, please don't blame me, but I know a story of another captain who was not from Earth, but who knows from where. From the outer face." And he never faced the problem you are facing now. "Say, what you say?" I say, "It was a big spacecraft who came from the depths of the space and arrived exactly where he was to go, here, there in Pascagoula." I say, "You are crazy, you are laughing." You know, the days to come, They heard about the story and they were amazing, but they didn't care anyway.
Yeah.
So that's all the things happened. Our first port was New Orleans, and the second port was Pascagoula. We had to take I don't remember, grain from there.
Yeah.
It's grain from there. But the cargo was not ready. So when we arrived there, they told us to the captain, "You have to stay about 6 days. Then you will sail because the cargo is not ready. We'll come, we'll start loading the ship after 3 days from today," and so on. Mm. Ah.
So, yeah, so it kind of not only, I mean, the whole thing, I mean, I wouldn't ever say I'm an expert on Greek mythology, but there's one thing that I've always noticed about this story that reminded me of certain tales in Greek mythology that. Often our hero or heroine that's involved in dealing with such stories, there's always a bit of good fortune and help that comes from somewhere.
Yeah.
Be it, coming down from Mount Olympus and one of the gods decides to help somebody or wherever. You know, you talk about getting the ball of wool to look for the Minotaur in the book. That kind of struck me, but I think you kind of thought that there was something going on that was kind of drawing you to this place through some kind of celestial guidance, perhaps.
Probably. Who knows? Well, there are so many powers, invisible powers around us. Who knows?
Yeah.
who knows? But anyway, I was very lucky. As I mentioned it in my book, I don't know how many coincidences were get together and helped me to be in Pascagoula, because it's impossible for me. It is about 10,000 miles away, and there was not any reason to go there, you know, for what? But when I was there, I say, hey, Stefanos, it's a good opportunity just to get out and go to the place, to see the place where it's this incident happened, and speak with some citizens local there, and that's all. But finally, there were many, many more things waiting for me when I arrived there, because I was very, very lucky. I found important people who helped me. The timing was right for me, and I was very, 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 very lucky to meet Mr. Dan Brodas. The man was working on the local newspaper, Mississippi Press, and he was the responsible reporter for this incident while it happened there. And someone told me about this, and they told me go to the local police, to the local newspaper and ask for help. This is what I've done, and everything went fine, because the man there, now he's deceased, Don Brodas, helped me a lot. He was surprised, and he liked me very much. He didn't believe that a man from Greece came and know about the story and all this stuff. And this this man was the key who opened the door of Charles Hickson House, because he was a friend. He take me with him. I remember the second day when I arrived there, he told me, okay, Stefanos, get in the car and go to Charles' home. I was starting trembling. I was shivering. I said, what to do? I'm not ready. No, just to see what's going on. Yes.
Yeah.
And I remember we went to the local police station in order to find the address of Charles Hickson, because he asked from the police to keep his address hidden, you know, because they bothering him all the time, reporters from United States and calls and all this stuff. And we went there, and there I met very, very important people, like Mr. Mike Robichaud. It was a young man, a police officer who was the man who sent from his sheriff to go to Charles Hickson home and get him to the police station that night. You know, he knew the story by first hand and all this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, once again, and I know you mention it in the book, wasn't Don about to go on holiday when you arrived as well? So it was pure chance that he was there the day you arrived?
No, it was not a holiday.
Oh, no, Don Brodas. Was Don about somebody...
Ah, yes, because, yes, 3 days after we met each other, the man left for his summer vacations. Yes, I was very lucky also.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I say, when you read the book, it's just, it couldn't have worked out any better for you, because it just seemed that you just happened to, you know, the chance change of orders to move ships, the new itinerary for the ship that ended up taking you, you know, if you asked anybody to list a number of ports from America, nobody would say Pascagoula. At all. You know, most people don't even know who it is. And like you say, the only reason you knew of the place was because of the incident that you'd read about. So, and then once again, you've got the incident with Don. He's there just as you arrive in the city and gets you moving and gets you introduced and everything. So it did seem that, you know, as daft as it sounds, it was fate that you appeared at that particular point in time.
Yeah, that's exactly what fate. Yes, something else decided to go there.
Yes,
I don't know. Yes,
yeah,
most
absolutely.
Probably fate. Yes, and you know, as all the radio officers of the merchant marine in every nation, the English, the Greeks, everybody has some appointments in the short waves, and they speak every day, as I recall. And when I said my story to other vessels, other Greek radio officers, most of them, they have been there, you know. Many, many Greek ships have been there, but nobody interested, nobody knew about. Because, you know, in Greece, nobody, as I remember, nobody cares about UFOs, only a few people. The minority only, you know, because the, most of them laughing at this. They have their problems all those years.
Yeah.
Even today, you know, I'm very sad because when they heard about my book that published, is the first Greek book. Probably I am the first Greek author who writes has a book published in English. And now in Spanish, outside Greece. And they, how can I say, they boycott this.
Yeah,
I don't know what happened. Because some friends of mine went to their clubs. They have, there is one team which is about UFOs and all phenomena, you know. And told them that Mr. Panagiotakis wrote a book about this and it's published it in English and it's everywhere in Amazon and all this stuff. And they say, what story about Pascagoula? But you must know Pascagoula is a fake story. It's proved to be a fake story. And I was amazing. I was very angry about this.
Yeah.
And they say, Calvin Parker, the friend of mine said, but Calvin Parker wrote a book now. He came back on the and has said his story to the people and say, well, what he wrote, we know what he wrote. And Stefanos, what is Stefanos? Stefanos is a reporter. He go to Pascagoula, drank a few beers. He walked he walked the streets of Pascagoula, went to this place. This is new stuff, nothing new. But we know very, very well that this story is a fake story. These fishermen, they tell lies. The fishermen were hallucinated, heavy hallucinated, and you know.
Anything but admit that there was something peculiar that had happened. It is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things, Stefanos, because you know, I would never say I'm an expert. I know a lot about ufology, but I'm not going to try and name European researchers or anything. Greece has always been one of those countries where I've always been quite surprised that there isn't a culture of ufology in regards to, we never hear any reports or anything like that. And there doesn't seem to have been a, like here in the UK, we've got several incidents and areas where, strange things happen. We've got sort of triangles in Scotland and England and things.
Yes, we have a lot.
Yeah.
But they are people who stay at home and write their stories. And they read foreign books, and this is how they made their reports, you know. In the past, there were two very, very good. One of them, Mr. Balanos, which I mentioned it in my book, George Balanos. He was the first in Greece who published a very, very big book about named invaders with a question mark, invaders. And this is the first book I read in my life about UFOs. And it has everything inside there. Everything. There were everything, except Pascagoula, because written in 1970. I spoke with this man. I met this man when I came back from Pascagoula one night, finished with the ship. And I intend to give him my story in order to publish it, because he knew a lot of people here in Greece. But, all through these years, the man has changed his mind. He became, I don't know the word. He started to think that, UFOs, it's nothing, not important, as it is matters about the soul and matters about other dimensions and heavy stuff, you know.
Yeah, so he kind of started in ufology and then moved to the more spiritual writing. Yes,
exactly. You said the word about spiritual. Yes, it was about this. Now the man, he's still alive. And when my friend asked this UFO team in Greece, which is resident now, is they are in Facebook and everywhere, and told them about this, and they replied to besides what they say about the story, that is a fake story, they said that George Balanos, our best, says the same thing. And, you know, I think that the man is not okay anymore. The other man was Mr. Kouchoukis, who is, he's also, now, I lost this man, we were together, he published my story in Greek, because he was the man who was responsible for the research team Sirius.
Yeah.
And he was the director of the Greek UFO magazine, Astral Conduct and UFOs, in which my story was published in 8 parts. I lost this man. I cannot find him today. As I see on the internet, he still writes books. Mm. He wrote before, about in the 80s, he wrote about UFOs. Then he stopped, and now I see that he write many books about Egypt, you know, the ancient Egypt and stuff like this, about spiritual again, about Jesus Christ. And, you know, every time he goes down there to Nazareth and Bethlehem and all, not as a fanatic or religion fanatic, but just as a researcher about what happened, who was Jesus Christ and who was the one and the other. But I cannot find this man. He will be very proud of me if he knows that I made my book finally abroad. But I cannot find this man. These were the two most important persons. Mostly this man, the second man I spoke, Mr. Kouchoukis. He was a more firm believer about UFOs and, you know.
Yeah.
So, nothing else in Greece. We have many, many incidents. Many, many, many incidents. But they just write it and that's all. Nobody goes to make a research. Only in a few, in a couple of them, they made a research. Nothing else. They see lights in the sky as everywhere. Hmm. But nobody... they mention it, but they do nothing.
Ah.
They do nothing. Mostly they are... they care about stories like Bigfoot or, you know, yes, stuff like this.
Yeah. Well, that's another one of my interests as well. I mean, I like, I'm interested in quite a lot of fringe subjects, the Farnos. So, you know, I'm always interested in UFOs, especially when you get as good an account as the one you've published, because, you know, it's a really, really good book.
Thank you.
And it's nice to get that kind of perspective, because whilst it's not the most famous case, I think if you have an interest in ufology and for whatever reason you find yourself in it, finding it an interest in it, Pascagoula is always one of the cases that, like, you know, like we've mentioned earlier, the Hills and especially Travis Walton. It's one of those cases where you just look at it and it's very, very compelling because of the witnesses and the experience. And I think it's the same with certain other fringe subjects, such as Bigfoot and the Yowie. There are, you know, a lot of it you can kind of say, no, I think that there's a little bit of exaggeration here. But I think with similar cases such as this, there are always cases that are not easily explainable.
Listen, Paul, I'm not rejecting anything. Everything is possible. Everything.
Absolutely.
Everything. Okay. You know, paranormal cases and stories like Bigfoot. People is not crazy. They see things. They keep seeing things in the sky, in the forests, everywhere.
Mm.
Spirits. I believe also in fairy tales and all tiny people on hollow earth.
Yes.
There are many, many possibilities for everything. It's not written just to be, okay, I have a story to say, anyone. Something's going on. We'll see. Something is going on, definitely.
Absolutely.
Everything. Yes.
Yeah, well, I've even ended up ghost hunting in Kefalonia on a holiday once. So, you know, I'm open to all possibilities as well, Stefanos. I think you've got to keep an open mind, but try and be... forensic in dealing with these stories and incidents.
Yes. I remember I was a young boy, a little boy. My granny used to tell me a story about witches and ghosts that happening in other cities in Greece, in small villages.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of tales like this. Most probably they are not tales. Something is happening, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
People see things. They see. But one day, who knows?
Yeah, well, the oldest written ghost story is Greek, isn't it? I believe it was Pliny the Younger covered a story. I think that's the first written account of a ghost story.
Yes, yes, so they start like this.
Absolutely, and it's one of those stories that, you know, it's got, you know, wailing spirits and rattling chains and.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Bodies buried where they shouldn't do, son. And
yes, yes, yes. Bodies buried without a reason, yes.
Precisely.
Suddenly, yes.
Very much so.
I also heard about we have many, many UFO sightings around Olympus. The mountain of gods. Yes, every day they have reports by people who live there and men who make trips there and stay there, you know. People from Athens, the young men from Athens, they go there and just for make to climb up the mountain, you know. And I have seen also photographs by mysterious lights that go up in this mountain. I think also that these the 12 gods of our mythology probably were real people from somewhere else.
Well, strange to think.
Yes, I'm convinced about this. I believe this.
Absolutely.
Everywhere we have, you know, the answer. If you see this amazing series on History Channel about ancient aliens. It is also a Greek man, Mr. Georgios.
Yes, with his hair. Famous hair.
Yeah. How is his name? Anyway.
Yes, I know exactly who you mean.
Tsoukalos.
Sure. That's it.
Yes.
Everybody knows.
He's an amazing man. They do a very good job with Elik von Däniken and all the other researchers. And then you see that there is a connection from the ancient past and beyond. Most probably, we planted here.
Yeah.
I think we are planted here. This planet not belongs to man, only to the animals. And
yeah.
I think we are the extraterrestrials.
Well, nothing surprises me. It wouldn't surprise me with everything that's going on with Mars. Somewhere down the line it ends up that's where we originally came from. I would not be surprised in the slightest.
Yes, because I think we are not fitted in this planet. We are not fit here. It's a beautiful planet with beautiful animals, with a stability. But when you put the man in this crazy, in this planet, it becomes a theater of crazy.
Yes.
Because the man has brain, and this is the problem. He start kills everything, destroys everything. Now look how is Earth.
Sadly,
In a critical point.
Yes.
I saw in Caribbean and in other parts of the ocean full of plastics.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
Yes, whales getting out on the shores. and then stomach is full with 20 kilos of plastics.
Yeah.
Those poor animals, say that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think we can all agree about that, Stefano.
Yes.
It's sad. So, when you kind of met, when you first landed in Pascagoula and got in there, the other thing that strikes me about the book is it's just how friendly everybody is when you turn up. You know, at the end of the day, they don't know you from anyone, Stefanos.
They were. I never met a single man who is looking at me differently. He was very, very friendly. When I say I'm from Greece, I came here for your incident, and they, oh yes, I want to help you make this go there. Ask him. This. That's how the door opened for me. Mm. And finally, I met Charles Hickson. And it wasn't, as you already read, it was not an interview with him about the incident. I didn't care about it. I knew about the incident. I was sure about this. Most important for me was to catch a fish. I mean, to fish into the soul, in the soul of Charles Hickson. And he told me many, many amazing things.
Yeah.
When he was sure that I was not just another reporter who came there and see this man and about his incident, he opened his mouth and told me many, many things.
Yeah, I mean, it does, you know, the conversation, as I've said to a few people that I've spoken to over the last couple of months, Stefanos, I think for a lot of these people that have had an experience, there's the initial reporting and the media frenzy where they just get bombarded, and like you mentioned earlier about Charles, he'd had his name and address and telephone number removed from the phone book.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Essentially, because people seem to think that, oh, if someone has experienced something, that they can just go around uninvited and just bother them.
Welcome to Kraken Murray, the biggest liquid hydrocarbon ocean on Saturn's moon Titan.
And this is just one of the places you get to visit and learn about when you listen to the Hostile Worlds podcast.
The Hostile Worlds podcast, which is, of course, a science-based audio drama documentary series that teaches you all about our universe in a fun and entertaining way.
Head on over to hostileworlds.net to subscribe on your podcast app of choice.
All the time.
And then, but obviously, I think the key thing that allowed you to do as well was obviously your personality, because you're a very friendly and open gentleman. But also, I think it was the fact that you were very respectful about both the town and the people that were there.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, and it just makes it easier. I think that...
It was easier for me, yes. It was the main thing that made my research so easy there. I went everywhere. I saw the place. At first, I remember when I tried to enter the shipyard, the old shipyard. It was a gate, and the man there, the guard, told me, "Oh no, it's impossible. Go back." And I say, "I'm coming from Greece, man. I travel so fast, and now you tell me no."
Yeah.
For what reason? I'm not here to buy your land. Just I want to see the place. Mm. Okay, call your superior. He made a call from the gate and said down there to the other part. It was about away, and call his chief. And the man said, "Okay, tell him come to me." I went there. I said, "Why?" Because I saw people fishing at the same time. You know, they have entered there. I said, "No, why not for me? I'm not a." There is not any TV station or radio station. I'm just a man. I'm going to see the place, take some photographs, and go away.
Mm, yeah.
And he told me, okay, because it was prohibited to take photos from all the area. Mm. So he called another man, Mr. Billy Sharp, I remember.
Yes.
The name, and he take me to the place. Show me where the UFO hovered and let's say land, and where the two fishermen fishing and all this stuff. I'm took many photographs, which are published in my book. And also I met many, many people there. Even the taxi driver who helped me, Mrs. Bertil Moore. I don't know if he's dead or alive today, because she was a 50 years old woman back there. And she's also told me her story about a UFO after a few days after the Pascagoula incident. But she was afraid to say that. And she was open to me. She opened her heart and said, "Stefanos, yes, me and my husband and the whole neighborhood, we saw exactly almost the same craft as the two fishermen described it. I saw it a few days after, hovered above our neighbor and go away." And many people also, they saw crafts all these days.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing about the book as well, is it's not just about Charles and Calvin's experience, and it's the fact that a lot more people saw something both the same day, and also I think the week after, there were still sightings of this mysterious blue light in the sky buzzing the area.
Even the police officers. There is, I don't remember the name. I read the story. I didn't know. I took it. I borrowed it from another book. Mm. It was also another a police officer from Biloxi. Yeah. We saw, yes, he saw the same, 2 days after, he saw a craft hover blue, with blue lights and all this, you know.
Yeah.
Well, there were many, many reports. And Mr. Heine came there, and Mr. Harder.
Yeah.
They checked the man, you know. The problem was with Calvin Parker, who was, he cannot accept the story. He cannot believe in his eyes, you know.
Mm.
He was suffering all those years when I was with Charlie, and he told me that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing as well about the experience, because, you know, when you look at Charles's version of the story and then compare it with Calvin, whilst they both experienced something at the same time, how they reacted to it were very, very different, because obviously Calvin was absolutely traumatized by what had happened to him. Because obviously I remember, you know, reading, as you mentioned in the book, when Charles comes round, because obviously he's laid on the floor, isn't he, when he basically comes back round after the incident.
Yeah, yeah.
Calvin's further away and he's just screaming, isn't he?
Yes, of course. He cannot accept it. He said, "We're going to die. What's happening to us, Charlie?" And all this stuff. And I now became again very, very angry, because these men had not any experience before. They never see any film, sci-fi film, or they are very, very simple people. They watching television, they prefer to see Western films and war films and all this stuff. They heard about, Charles Hickson heard about UFOs, but he laughed at the story, don't care, you know, as. And Calvin had nothing heard before.
Yeah.
And in Greece, there was a man who said, "Yes, these guys know about what they say." You know what he wrote about Pascagoula? He said that the men have seen very old sci-fi films. The first film was The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yes.
Because the creature was like a cloud.
Yes.
Cloud. And then he recalled, to prove his story, that Charles and Calvin were hallucinated, or they make the story. There was another film named This Island Earth.
Yes.
This Island Earth, yes, of 1955. And there was mutant creature there with his heads were like claws.
Yes.
And you remember in Pascagoula incident, the robots, they have heads like claws.
Yes.
The hands, you know.
Yeah.
The hands were like
claws. Yeah, and pincers and things like that, wasn't
it? Yes. That's why they use these two films in Greece to prove that these men say lies, that they hallucinated, you know.
Yeah.
That's why I became very, very angry with my country.
Mm.
I don't care if my book is being known here. I don't care. I don't give a damn, you know. But they try to They accept Betty Hill, they accept Travis Walton, and all the others, the Endless Man story and all this stuff. But Pascal Coulan, no. Why? I say, because a Greek man write a book about this, and they didn't write it, you know.
Yes. So a bit of, yeah, I know what you mean there. I mean, that's...
When you think like this, you cannot make a research, you cannot improve as man, as nation, as, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got to be, like you say, as we've referred to earlier, about being open-minded. And I think that's something that often comes close, especially when you're dealing with this, because it's, you know, as you refer to there, it's very easy to dismiss a lot of these sightings, because they blame media, because a lot of people, another film that constantly gets used, especially in the UK as an excuse or an explanation when witnesses come forward, is that, oh, everybody must have seen Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And that's... they're just basically reenacting it because they've seen the film and they want to be a part of something like that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, like you say, referring to those films, yes, fair enough. You know, films like This Island Earth and The Day the Earth Stood Still. I mean, they are science fiction classics. You know, you've got Forbidden Planet. There's especially in the 50s, there's a whole realm of films of that nature, of alien visitors coming to Earth and visitations and, you know... Often they talk about nuclear power, and that's the reason they're coming here. So, and I just think that's very dismissive.
Yes, but how comes that Charles Hickson and Calvin Parker were science fiction aficionados about this?
Yes.
To make the story, I become crazy when I think about it. How has the courage to write things like this and make Greek people believe, follow the wrong way, you know?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the other thing as well is that both of those films were released in the 1950s. This incident happened 20 years later. So neither of them would have been shown on television often.
Of course. And the most important that they lived in Pascagoula. They don't live in New York.
Yeah, precisely. Exactly.
Or in London. They are villagers. Yeah. Simple men. They are feasting. They are working. They don't care nothing. And they listen to their music. They have their problems.
Yeah.
It is quite different, even in Greek villages or in other parts of the world. In the villages, it's not so usual to go to the cinema and see films like this. Because the television, those years, okay, in United States, it was 1973. Yes, they played the films, but I don't know if Charles Hickson has the time to stay and watch a film with flying saucers instead of a film with cowboys and Indians.
Absolutely, and there was no video shops, there's no streaming.
Of course,
so,
of course.
So, you know, a lot of these films people wouldn't see unless it was on randomly on a Saturday night, and depending whereabouts you live in America, you would only have certain cable channels, you didn't have every channel. You know, I was reading something yesterday, Mississippi at the moment, strangely enough, 20% of the population of Mississippi don't have access to the internet, even today.
Even today, yeah.
So, I mean, that says more about, like you say, you refer to it, it was a small town, they were hardworking people, they were used to, you know, as far as they were concerned, it was mostly manual labour, you know, blue-collar, white-collar workers, everybody sort of worked either on the port or in the fields. These were just normal people with normal lives, probably with no fringe interests.
Acrivos, exactly. I said akrivos, that's exactly in Greek.
Absolutely. Well, it's educational as well as informative, talking to you, Stephanos. Thank you.
I wish I could speak better English, but...
Hey.
You know, I've never been in a school. I'm a self-taught. You have to know this. And the story starts in 1964, when I heard the first time in my life the Beatles.
Yes.
And when I bought the first LP... please me, on the backside was a story written about the book, and I was so furious. I wanted to know what they say about this, because in Greece we don't have any information about this guy. Anything. It was quite prohibited, because they have long, let's say, this mop hair.
Yes.
In this country was something strange. They say that they were gay, or, you know, they are women.
Yeah.
I have big problems with the Beatles in my life, but I love them. They sent me out of school. Now we change the world, the story. We don't speak about UFOs, we speak about the Beatles. I remember when I get a postcard from a friend with the Beatles in Greece. I was 14 years old, 13, like that. Yeah. And I have it in my book and during the lesson in the high school. and my teacher showed me that I was looking down and said, "Hey, Stefanos, Mr. Panagiotakis, what are you looking?" I hide the photograph of the Beatles. And it was a photograph of 1963, you know, with you remember what they were.
Yeah.
How can I say it? Costumes. Were different.
Suits. Yeah. They all wore the same suit.
Yeah, yes. By Brian Epstein. She opened the book and discovered this. They sent me 6 days out of school.
Oh,
it was the punishment. 6 days. They sent me out.
She probably preferred
my father. My father went and said, "What he made? He was just a photograph."
Yeah.
Yes, but these guys are gay. Oh. It's not for our Christian society. What is this guy? You know. A few years later. Everything has changed.
Yeah, everybody loves them. Yeah. I mean, perhaps she preferred the Rolling Stones, Stefanos, and that's why she was so angry.
No. When they heard about the Rolling Stones, they became... these guys came here in Greece in 1967, and after 20 minutes, they threw them away, you know.
Yeah.
Because I remember Mick Jagger took some red roses and throw him to the crowd, and the policemen go up to the stage and they hit them and take them out, and it was very terrible things.
Terrible.
It was the first band that came in Greece.
Yeah.
And since then, we have a military junta, I remember.
Yes.
And since then, the second band which came in Greece was the Police, 1982. Nobody came in. Nobody.
Well, everybody's probably too scared of getting hit
by the police. The people, the young generation, we love them. We know about the Kings, the Yardbirds, and Searchers, and all this good bands. But it was prohibited in Greece anyone to come here, so we don't have the chance to see these guys here.
Well, anyway. Thankfully things have changed. So yeah, I mean, so where do you think you're going to go now? I mean, has the success of the book kind of given you a bit more impetus to investigate some new cases, Stefanos?
No, I don't think so. I'm 68 years old now. I'm very tired. I'm not a researcher. I told them to Philip Mendel. I'm not an investigator. I was. I'm not now. I don't know nothing about this. Now, this summer, I'm going to meet Calvin Parker, and I will be in Pontefract, you know?
Yes, I'm going to that as well.
You'll be there?
Yes, so I will. I don't live far away from Pontefract.
Ah, that's nice. I have already my tickets, my fly tickets. Yes, I'm coming there. I will arrive on Friday.
Brilliant.
The day before the conference.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to meeting you in person, Stefanos.
Oh, that's great.
That'd also, really
Philip.
Good.
Philip Kinsella and all the other guys, Chris Evers.
Yes, it looks very good.
A lot of interesting people. And most important, Calvin Parker. I've met Charles Hickson. Now it's my turn to meet Calvin Parker before I die. That's great.
I mean, that'd be brilliant. Well, that's excellent, because that'll be really good. I'll bring my book along and you can sign it for me then.
yes, why not? You say you are living near Pontefract?
Yes, I don't live far away at all. I'm about 30 minutes away.
Wow, you are a very lucky boy. I have to travel. I have to go first in Stansted, London. Then I have to take a train and get out to the Liverpool station and then get the underground.
Yeah.
No, go to King's Cross and Pancras station and get a train. I don't know how to work like this, but I don't know. I don't know about the trains, Paul. I have a problem. I have to know the exact train, what time leaves from London. And I will stay only on Saturday, because Sunday morning I have to leave again. I have to go back and get a train from, not from Pontefract. What is the address? Wakefield.
Wakefield, yes. Yeah. Well, Wakefield is the next train station from where my mother lives. So I know the area really well.
Okay. I will call you later, not after a few days, to help me, to give me instructions. How, you know, if you've ever been, you've been in London, right?
Oh yes, yes, yes. Yeah. So I'm okay. I'll be. You can count on me for some support.
Yes, I need. Anyway, I need. I told Philip about this, but he says, told me, Stefanos, I have to be in London many years, so I don't know how. What to do? I'm reading in the internet because this is very helpful.
Yes.
I see about the trains, what time they depart and all this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I have already, my hotel is in Castleford.
Yes, yeah.
Yes, stay there.
Yeah, you're going to see all the sights.
But there will be no time for me to see Pontefract and all the surroundings. There's no time.
Yeah.
I will be only in the conference and then... 7 o'clock in the afternoon, everything is finished. I will stay probably for a beer with Philip, and then the next morning I have to depart for Greece.
Well, let's hope they get you some mythos in.
I beg your pardon?
Let's hope they get some mythos in.
Ah, beer.
Yeah, beer. Oh, mythos is always my beer of choice in Greece. It's a lovely beer.
Yeah, everybody says that, but now we have a much better beer. The name is Alpha.
Ah, yes, I've had
like
some of that.
The letter Alpha. Ah, it's fantastic beer.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes. You have been in Kefalonia, right?
Yeah, several times. Lovely, beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful places I've ever been in the
world. Yes, I know. I have a very, very close friend who lives there. He has a home. He lives now. He's 2 blocks from here. We were together a few hours ago. But he has another house there, and he will go now the next week, and he will stay up to September, you know.
Yeah.
In the northern part of Kefalonia, near Apostoli.
Yeah. Well, I've managed to travel all the place. So I've been all the way up to Fiscardo and all the way down to the.
Yes.
So
yes.
That's beautiful. Picture postcard. Oh, yes. Well, brilliant. So, just to wrap up then, Stefanos. Do you honestly, you think now that obviously with Calvin's book coming out and obviously your book as well, that people are going to start treating this case more seriously?
Of course, definitely. Because we have the first part, now we have the second part. And there is also a small book between those guys, my book, which says, you know, connects. It's connected with both men.
Mm.
The story, you know.
Absolutely, and especially I think your book has the witness report that nobody else had. Was that the Emmanuel Sigalas
from Kefalonia?
Yeah, was he?
Yes.
There we're talking about fate.
I read it in my book. He told me. I say, hey guy, hey man, come here. I am. He was not born there. He was born in New York.
Mm.
But his parents were from Kefalonia.
Yeah.
Emmanuel Sigalas, real Kefalonia man, because he was fantastic. When he saw me, he didn't believe. He says, hey, you are from Greece. What are you doing here? I say, sir, I came for this incident with the UFO. Wow, my son, are you hungry? Are you thirsty? Come in my home. Yes. And then he opened his mouth for first time and told me many, many things. He didn't send to anyone except Mr. Hynek, but privately. He asked from Mr. Hynek not to say anything to the public about this. And Don Brodas told me about Sigalas.
Mm.
He knew about, he heard about, because his cousin Ron Brodas was with Sigalas in a car when they saw the craft taking direction from where the place they were directed towards the shipyard, you know.
Yeah.
And Mr. Sigalas told me all the things, what they saw and how they saw. And he was sure about this, told me, Stefanos, yes. He was a churchman, a man of the church, but he was okay. He accepted the story of these two fishermen.
I think that's the key thing as well, because obviously it also gives more credit to Calvin and Charles's experience.
Of course.
Because obviously he was on the, was he on the motorway driving and they saw the light, Emmanuel?
Yeah. But recently, you know, I think you know about, recently we have very, very important witnesses about the story after my book came out. And as Philip Mandel tries all the time to make the story as firm as possible, you know, and finally we found a couple, the Blairs, you know, Blairs. Because they were to the opposite side of this shipyard and they saw the craft landing. That's fantastic. Because till today we knew that only Charles and Calvin saw the craft, nobody else. But they saw it also. And it was the point where most people cannot accept the story because nobody else, even on the bridge, they didn't show nothing down there in the shipyard, the blue light. But this guy, this couple saw it. That's great. It's fantastic. It's, so.
I mean, it often happens as well when certain cases, and I'm trying to think, there's a case where I think when someone comes forward and basically says that, occasionally it will either jog somebody's memory or it will make someone think, well, this guy's telling people what he saw. I saw the same thing and everybody's ripping this guy to pieces. I'm going to stand up for him.
Yes, yes.
And I think it's good because once it gets out there, like you say, a lot of people either don't want to talk about it or unless they know someone else has seen something, they don't feel comfortable admitting to themselves often, Stephanos, what
sometimes,
they saw.
Sometimes, yes. Yes, like Calvin Parker also.
Yes. I mean, like I say, it's clearly taken him a long time to come to terms with what happened. And to be fair, I'm not really sure he still has.
Most people, there are people who saw it, they have the experience and they don't accept it. Mm. They say, no, it's not happening to me. This most probably my mind confused.
It is, and it's very difficult because it's very easy to dismiss such cases. Yes. And I think it often gets forgotten, Stephanos, in regards to these people, you know, as we mentioned earlier about how Calvin was after the immediate aftermath of the incident.
Yes, yes.
But also, you know, like what happened to Travis Walton, you know, that's 43 years ago. He's lived with that and been basically called every name under the sun for 43 years. And he still sticks to that story. And not only do you have to give somebody like Travis immense credit, but I don't think I could put up with that for that long.
He says the truth. I don't think that I see the man every day. He's very famous. He goes everywhere. And for me, he's doing very well. Mm. He does the same thing that Charles Hickson does.
Yeah.
He went everywhere. He opened because the people must know about this. Yeah. If you keep it in secret, it's nothing. Even if they laugh at you, you have to say that. Now I see in every conference, Travis Walton is a member in every. He goes everywhere, you know.
Yes, absolutely.
And he tells the truth. He has a very a great story.
And it's
fantastic
very,
story.
Very genuine. He seems a very genuine man.
Yes, very, very, very.
Yeah. So right then, thank you for today, Stephanos. Where can people find your book?
In Amazon only, in Spanish and English. There are two editions.
Excellent.
And as told me, as Philip Mandel told me, we expect a German edition.
Oh.
I think it's going to be by the end of 19 or the beginning of 20, because there are other books from the same public house to be published, you know.
Yeah, you've got your release dates, and everybody jumps into where, you know, time comes first, and everybody's got their bookings in. So, well, lastly, I mean, all those years ago when you first read that first book, Invaders and everything, did you ever think you'd be in 2019 talking about UFOs still?
Can you repeat it, please?
Yeah, so here we are, 40 odd years since the incident.
Yes.
38 years since you went there. Did you ever think it would come back round like this, that you'd still be talking about your visit and your original story?
If I'm talking about this?
Yeah, did you still think you would still be doing it now? As in talking about the case?
I can understand the question. Maybe I don't know.
So
maybe my mind is stopped.
That's okay. As in,
can you describe it differently?
Yeah.
Can you make the question?
Yeah. So today,
yes.
Did you think you would still be talking about 1981?
Oh, why not? Of course. Of course. And I'm doing it. That's brilliant. We speak about this night now.
Mm.
Yes. I, but in Greece, I don't have where to tell the story.
Yeah.
I told you before. Where?
Yeah. Absolutely.
The ears are closed now. No, nobody cares. They just don't care.
Yeah.
You see so many silly things happening around here in this country.
Mm.
Nobody called me. I also, when I was interested to pass all the editions of Lightning Express in Greece about Calvin and Charles Hickson, my book, they don't want to hear anything. Only one publisher told me, but Mr. Panagiotakis, you have to pay to release your book. We shall make the release, but you have to pay for this. You know, this is right.
No.
And so all the doors were closed.
Well, hey, I'm glad the book's opened up a new market to you. And
I don't think so. In outside of Greece, yes, most probably.
Yeah.
But there are most important books like Calvin Parker, Charles Hickson books. They are okay. I just add a small stone in the castle.
I think you
just
are being,
only this.
I think you are being very humble, Stefanos. I think it's a really, really good book. I recommend it highly. And I wish you continued success. And all being well, I will see you in Pontefract over the summer, and we will have a chat then, and I will buy you a beer, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. And I will buy for you too. Okay.
Stefanos, ευχαριστώ.
Και εγώ ευχαριστώ πάρα πάρα πολύ.
Goodbye, my friend.
Thank you very, very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Bye-bye, Paul.
Bye-bye.